Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
What's up, After Buzzers? We're back here for episode 7 of Cults and Extreme Beliefs. We're going to be breaking down FLDS, their lifestyle, Jeff Warren. We're also going to be talking about the sit-down between these two communities and so, so much more. Please stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, After Buzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin. Dun, dun, dun,
dun, dun. Hey guys, welcome back. Thank you so much for tuning in. We're here, episode 7. I'm your host, Juliette Bivere, and I have my lovely panel. How's everybody doing?
Hey, I'll start first. Hey everybody, I'm Al Gregg, Al G. Glad to be here with the crew.
Okay. Hey guys, I'm Mina, back again after a long break.
What's up, guys? I'm Taylor Gates, back after 1 week off.
I missed you guys.
Yeah, we 100% we missed you too. Last week was quite an episode. And if you guys just tuning in now have not seen that, we really encourage you to go back and check that out because we learned a lot. Very intense. I learned a lot here tonight too, as well. We're gonna be breaking this all down and so much more. We're gonna just have talk about the general rules. We're gonna talk about the believers, the non-believers, and if Thanksgiving dinner is even a possibility next winter, who knows? And we also have some really cool segments toward the end of the show, so you'll want to stay tuned for that. But let's get into some general thoughts, everyone. So give me your general thoughts of this episode in terms of what we've seen this far. And then also, if you had any prior knowledge to this cult, let the fans know.
I'll go out on a limb just in the fact that I think everyone agrees that they see, Warren Jeffs, possibly even as a pedophile and possibly molesting his own children. But the part about where they move in and take the land, I'm not quite sure if that's the best way to handle it because a lot of people being left destitute. And we can unpack that later.
Mina, what are your thoughts?
Oh, yeah. No, I was just thinking honestly, it was really unfair what happened. And we kind of see a little bit of that from how Norma's justifying everything that's happened and how can you reconcile with people who left the church who kind of caused this to happen by, exposing Warren. I don't know. It's just whole thing was kind of crazy to me.
Did you have any prior knowledge of this cult prior to the show?
I've heard of the Church of Latter-day Saints. I've never heard of the F before the LDS. So this is the first time hearing of this specific offshoot.
Oh, very cool. What about you, Taylor?
Yeah, I thought this was really interesting. They got a lot of different perspectives. I thought this was kind of a change of what we've been seeing with I know with one of them we had really emphasized just the cult leader, and the other times we've emphasized sort of the people who have left the church, and here we got a pretty balanced perspective. I actually did have prior knowledge. I watched this Lifetime movie called Outlaw Prophet Warren Jeffs. It's a Lifetime movie. It's amazing, but also a little bit terrible. It has Tony Goldwyn, who's Fitz in Scandal, Molly Parker, who's been in House of Cards and Lost in Space, and Joey King, who's in The Kissing Booth, which is also fun and awful. Mm-hmm. But it's an interesting movie, and I would definitely check it out if you're interested in this cult, because it shows a lot of different other perspectives and dives deeper into Warren Jeffs himself.
Oh, very cool. Well, we'll make sure to let you guys know in the comments section where you can find all that.
Yeah,
I hadn't really heard of this cult prior to this. We know a little bit about Mormonism. The only thing I kind of knew, or at least it made me think of Kimmy Schmidt. Have you guys ever seen that show? It's a Netflix show for those of you who don't know, who follow Kimmy Schmidt, who was in a cult that was very similar to this one. She had the same outfits. They kind of satirized Warren Jeffs. That was just kind of, I guess, an upbeat comedy, taking something that's rather negative and turning it into a positive. If you haven't seen it, I really recommend you check that out. And we also have an after show for that, so you'll be covered on all ends. Let's break down a little bit more about what are their beliefs, what's their lifestyle? Because on top of having beliefs, it was a real lifestyle. Were you surprised by any of the customs that you saw, Al?
The only thing that particularly surprised me, and I felt just a twinge and offended by it personally, was marrying full adult males to underage women. and our girls, but we'll get into that. And shout out though to, here's the thing, we gotta make the exception. Norma, as far as everybody being forced in place to marry a guy or the young women, Norma was one of the few people who kind of made the decision on her own as an adult. She was 20.
Yeah.
And she's actually kind of like had a crush on this teacher, and she went and said, I'd like to marry him. So I actually don't have a problem with that because she was an adult. She made an informed decision at 20 years old. But it's the young kids, you know, we're
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Concerned about, oh, one other thing about the customs. I don't have a problem with the customs. I mean, I like the idea of people living communally. One group, you know, will take care of the food. Another group will sew and make the clothes, and people living off the grid. As far as getting back to nature and all that, there's nothing wrong with that. And simplicity, just that in and of itself, it just gets kind of hairy then when we talk about like the other things that were going on that are against the law.
Yeah, very true. And there's a reason for those things to be against the law. But one thing that surprised me was, as you're mentioning, just how many people would live in one house. Mina, can you imagine living in a house with over 100 people?
Yeah, it's called a sorority. It happens in the modern day. But that's kind of crazy. Like, there's something about it that just feels like, I don't know, like, if you ever saw the movie The Village, directed by M. Night Shyamalan, or just, like, the concept of Amish people kind of removing themselves from modern-day society and going back into, like, this older version of history, which, honestly, there's nothing wrong with.
Not at all.
Like, I'm not going to sit here as a millennial judging people for removing themselves from technology. Like, I could never do that, but if that's what you're born into, how would you know anything else?
You know, don't know anything
It's not
else.
Like people from the 1800s were like, oh man, I wish I had like some sort of device where I could communicate with people and go on Facebook and do all these things. Like, no, like, it's just, for us, like, it's so hard to imagine living like this, but being born into it, like...
Well, being born into it also, and as you're saying, that they don't know anything else, and that was a tool that was really used to manipulate them. And Taylor, maybe you can speak a little bit more about this, because we've seen this throughout the show, is that they kind of just make sure that people don't have anything, and they do create the separation between the real world and the rest.
Yeah, that was definitely a thing here. I thought it was interesting that they don't recruit, is kind of what they said, mm-hmm. because a lot of the other cults we've talked about have really like embraced social media and used flyers to try to get more members. And here it's pretty much you're born into it, and then you die with it. And it's sort of just a thing that's passed on generationally, sort of within your own family. So I thought that was an interesting sort of switch from what we've been seeing. I also feel like, I don't know, and of course the movie I watched could have definitely dramatized things, and so it might not be 100% accurate, but I feel like Warren Jeffs himself really is kind of one of the first people to start using this, like, isolation, mm-hmm. Because before him they had TVs and stuff, and they didn't really have the internet on their computers, but they still had this technology. And so when he came into power, they even call it, I think, the Jeffs regime at one point. He is kind of the person who switched it and made it really, really extreme, more so than it already was.
Yeah, before that, it wasn't as oppressive until he came in. And that's, I mean, and not to say that there might be problems with people also, you know, living on the compound and the certain rules that we disagree with as a traditional society. But yeah, as far as like, if they want, you should be able to have a TV if you want it. You should be able to look at the internet if you want it. But see, that's that slippery slope, because as somebody used to go to church, I'm like, be careful, too much violence on TV, too much sex, be careful on the internet. And that's real, but at the same time, people should be allowed to control their own lives. Let the parents handle that, but in my opinion.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. This was, as you're saying, Taylor, I think that was something that shocked me the most, was the fact that they didn't recruit. So at least they're entitled to their beliefs, and I felt like the big theme that came out was this idea of free will and freedom. And I pose a question to you guys. Do you feel that Norma and people within the community are free?
Such a deep layered question. I don't know. I feel like they think that they are, but they've just, it's just the brainwashing thing. You know, we keep going back to that. Like, even the fact that he's in prison now and they can't, you know, really communicate with him until they go to the prison, which is the thing that they do sometimes. It's like he's still controlling them. And they even said when stuff like this happens, they, you know, interpret this as persecution and their faith gets stronger and stronger. So it's like nothing that happens is going to get them out of this.
Public shaming almost makes them band together more.
Yeah.
So that, which is the problem with that.
Right.
It's crazy, like, how there are outliers that decide for themselves, like, I'm going to leave at this age versus people who just think that, no, this is, like, their reality and this is the right way. It's the way of God. It's interesting to me because when I think about the people who leave the church, it's usually because they already felt like outliers to begin with. So in a way, it might be easier for them to make that leap.
Like poor Lamont, just because he was a bad kid, you know, mm-hmm. and maybe yelled out in class. And it's like the leader, like, wouldn't even look at him. And he's like, yo, they're never going to give my family favor. They're never going to let me get married. He was like doomed to be an outcast just because he was like, a quirky, rambunctious kid. Yeah,
a little rebel. And he played a great role in this episode just to give us this whole perspective of what it means to be an ex-member. And as we've seen in other episodes, once you leave most of these communities, you are exiled, you're shunned. And here they call them the apostates, and they do not know, believers do not want to be associated with them. However, the ex-members still want to be part of a community, which I thought was very interesting because I always assumed that they would just have their freedom per se and want to leave and never turn back. Are you guys surprised by the fact that they want to be back within this community?
A little bit, but I mean, Lamont said he wants to be able to know his sisters,
his family,
and his
yeah.
cousins, and I'm sure he doesn't want to see them suffering because at the end of the day, they're still his family. He still grew up around them, so mm-hmm. I'm sure he doesn't want to see them in this state of being evicted, not having the resources they need. It was a little bit surprising because this, you know, did bring him a lot of pain, but at the same time, I think that, you know, the love of family kind of conquered
and
that.
And to take it one step further, what I was touching on earlier about, there's nothing wrong with wanting to live in a community and be close to a certain group of people and your family and friends and people of the same values you do. You know, that's fine. And here's where I'm torn with the whole Norma thing. We were talking about that earlier. Norma, I like how she was able to kind of choose her own destiny. She has a job outside of this. But here's the thing. I wonder if she has kids, she probably does, that hasn't come up, but if she has children and daughters, is she allowing them to be married to older men when they are underage? And that's when she has to have accountability. That's where I draw the line.
I agree.
Yeah, she said she doesn't, like, I know it was a joke and it wasn't meant to be taken literally, but she said, I don't care if they get married when they're two, but
crazy.
The proper age is 18. And I was kind of like, wow, like, that's such an extreme statement to say that age doesn't matter, because age is a huge part of consent. Like, when can you, you know, develop maturely enough to be able to consent to something? I mean, we make this arbitrary line of 18. I mean, obviously some people mature faster, some people later, but like in our day and age, the number is 18. So it's just crazy to me that she would think it's okay for like a 14-year-old
yeah.
or a 12-year-old to be married to someone.
I agree too, but as you were saying, the way that she said that statement was kind of, it could be shifted in each and every way direction, because when she was saying 18 is when you're able to take on the responsibility. And
mm-hmm.
with this whole community, they do have a certain lifestyle. They are polygamous, and it's women have this responsibility to cater to men. And I feel like that's what she was trying to portray, is that that's when they're ready. However, as we come to find out, there's a lot of, you know, there's underage girls getting married. Therefore, they're having underage sex, and most of them are being abused. Mm-hmm. And we hear a little bit more about this with actually Rachel Jeffs. Jeff's daughter, which I was so surprised that his own daughter came out and shared all of this. We saw some snippets in the media. Had you ever heard of her or seen her out in the press rounds? No, I had not.
I had actually heard of the daughter accusing him of, you know, of molestation, which just kind of highlights the hypocritical nature of him. I'm sure his demeanor is passive and loving, but this guy, I mean, he got off on, you know, sleeping with underage women. What was his bride, like 12 or 14? Mm-hmm. And then, like, so to me, it's almost not a shocker that he would molest his own children. It's dead wrong and it's foul. But that's why if people were saying his heart's in the right place, okay, if his heart was in the right place, you wouldn't be molesting your own daughter. That just shows me you're a sicko already.
And also, if his heart was in the right place, he wouldn't have this quote from his journal entry, "If the world knew what I was doing, they would hang me from the highest tree." Why would you do that if you didn't have a guilty conscience?
He knows he's wrong.
It just doesn't make sense to me.
Well, they were explaining, I feel like, in this episode that it was a way to manipulate, because what's being told to young children time and time again and to the whole community is that they are being tested. And this is God just testing their faith, and in troubling times, it is easier to walk away and step away from the religion, but it's not the right thing to do, and you need your faith. So it seemed in a way as if it was like just a 360 of Warren Jeff just wanting to have full control. And Taylor, can you speak a little bit more about his crimes and kind of, do you have any updates on his life now?
Yeah, well, I feel like he's at the end of the day just pretty much a narcissist. He was actually one of the FBI's like 10 most wanted people at one time, and he was kind of on the run, staying at these different sort of, I don't know, it was like satellite, you know, followers' houses in different states and whatever. And he kept these really, really intense like journals and wrote everything down. And I think that, you know, at the end of the day, just the fact that he could get away with it and could have all these people following him no matter what he did gave him like a power trip.
Right. And this power trip has really created some kind of just division between these two communities. We spoke a little bit about Norma and her faith and Lauren and his faith. And I wanted to discuss a little bit more of, if you guys, do you think it is ever possible for these two communities to get together and hold hands? And did this make you understand both sides in the way that this, the storytelling, were you able to be empathetic towards both sides?
I loved Christine, who was like the go-between and who started that charity where she's like, where she's able to help them and give back, but not judge them. Because the minute you start judging them, then it's going to drive a wedge in them, because these people, right or wrong, they've had these beliefs and they believe God's told them. So I think that was the best tack, and that enabled and also enabled her to probably appeal to even people like Norma, who otherwise were like, I'm not talking to this person. But the fact that she came to give instead of to judge, and with the fact that she was able to sit down, Norma was able to sit down with Lamont and some other apostates, that I think that is the thing that needs to happen. Let's talk, and let's not even necessarily get into judging each other, but let's just break bread and hopefully have a mixer. Well, they'll be having Christmas dinner, probably not this year, but maybe in a couple of years. It's a start.
You know, to answer your question, like, yeah, you know, I think that it is possible for them to kind of bridge that gap. I think that can only happen when a new leader comes in and revises the interpretation of the biblical text of, well, not necessarily the Bible, but the text that says you can't talk to the apostates, to kind of like revise it in a way like, oh, well, under certain circumstances you can, if it's for the greater good of the community, blah, blah, blah. Like, there needs to be a leader that kind of like instills that for everyone to be able to follow and be like, okay, yeah, we're on board with this. I kind of feel like if no one enforces that, and it's not from a higher power, it's not from Warren or from whoever replaces him, then it's not going to be a thing
right.
that happens.
They're in need of a new prophet. And
I'm sorry, just kind of jump in along those lines just to piggyback. The fact that Warren Jeffers is in jail and he won't tell them, like, he communicated a message, hang in there, be of love, be steadfast. The fact that he won't tell them that you can now sign a deal with an apostate so you don't lose your house, I blame him for that. I don't like people losing their houses, but those people won't even sign a deal to maintain their own house or their own businesses, because they think signing anything with an apostate is like the devil, and they believe that. But if he was a good man, he would release them from that.
Well, he knows that he'll lose his access to
power. No, he's taking himself.
Can
he's taking the ship down with
if
him.
If he's in jail, can he kind of like release that statement from jail?
Even if he does, though, that's the thing. They're like, oh, you're testing us by saying that.
Yeah.
Like, saying that, you're just testing if we're still going to follow you. So even if he does go back on his word, like, there's no guarantee that they're going to follow it. They're going to view it as a test.
True.
Exactly. It seems that the only way for them to keep move forward is if he maybe installs a new prophet, as him being in prison, and then there's a new regime that comes along. But that doesn't really seem to be in the cards.
He's too egotistical to do that, right?
Yeah, I think he wants to really have control over everything. And as we mentioned in this episode, the fact that now he's in jail and they're being even more oppressed, their faith is being tested. And this is only making them stronger and more aligned. We talked about, you brought up a little bit about Christine. I want to talk about her some more because she was Switzerland. If we're comparing this to the war, she was definitely Switzerland. Did you do you understand her perspective and do you agree with it, or do you feel that she should be putting her foot down and she should be a little bit more harsher with her actions?
I'm just torn because it's like on one side, these are still people and they still need resources and they still need help. And they're probably not going to accept that help if she completely, demonizes them. But on the other hand, it's like, is she being complicit in letting all of this still happen by not speaking out? It's like such a difficult line to walk, I feel like.
It really is. Yeah.
I felt like her answer was quite the politician's answer when she said, I'm aware of the things that Warren has done. I'm aware of the things that he's been accused of. There's good and bad in Warren. Warren is good and bad, just like everybody else. And I feel like it's, in a way, a cop-out to say that because, there's good and bad in everyone, but there are certain things that are non-negotiable things that a person does where it's like, way past like
the, can't be part of our society.
Like way past the line of bad, where it's like no, like you're not a conducive member to society. You have to be like kind of shunned from society and put somewhere where you can't do this ever again, and you can't hurt someone ever again. So like to just simplify it to that extent, where you're like, oh, there's good and bad in everyone. Yeah, but not everyone's a pedophile. So I didn't like it. I felt like it was very like. Just kind of like coasting by and
No, she sugarcoated it.
Yeah, it's like you need to like, you can still help, but, and I get exactly what you're saying too, like if she takes a side then she can't be of service to them, they won't accept her help, but I feel like she can't just be like, oh, like yeah, there's good and bad to everyone. I didn't like that.
Right. Well, regardless, she did play a major role in bringing these two communities together. Yep. We have Lamont who goes to visit her center, and you have this moment of him shaking hands with Norma in the meeting, which I personally thought was just really so crazy because this whole episode, they're building up and building up the fact that this would never happen. They can't even be in the same room as each other. Just that'd be crazy to think that. And then we have this meeting. What were your thoughts when you were seeing this unwind in front of you?
That was a huge breakthrough. And I was even wondering if they were going to shake his hand back. I didn't know if you can't touch an apostate or even if young girls can't touch an older man's hands who's an apostate. That was huge. That shows progress.
Yeah. Do you think there's more progress to come, Mina?
I hope so. I mean, it looks like they're moving in the right direction. I think as long as they're without Warren as the leader, progress will come. I think the minute Warren comes back into the picture, that's where there is going to be a regression. Because even though their society might be better with Warren there, it's going to be kind of like this society that's very much controlled. It's kind of like the way I see it is kind of like Saddam Hussein's Iraq. Like he was a horrible, ruthless dictator, but there was, in a really strange sense, more peace with him there than when the U.S. invaded Iraq to bring democracy there and kind of like ruin everything. But it's like, Saddam's a horrible person, just like Warren has done horrible things. But there is a sense of like control and like weirdly prosperity in that regime.
Along those lines, it's like I'm of the opinion that yes, we'd like everybody to have democracy and freedom of choice, but you can't bring democracy at the barrel of a gunpoint because that's going to rally the people who are even if they're under an oppressive regime. So I'm like, no pedophilia, nothing like that. But I mean, it would be almost like us telling someone who lived you know, in the Middle East with, from a Western perspective, like, don't wear your hijab, you know, it's like, and because you're being oppressed, and women here might feel that, but, you know, other women might embrace that. That's mm-hmm. not for us to say culturally.
Right. That yeah. is something that came up again a lot, with this duality of where's right, where's wrong, where's freedom, where's being brainwashed, and it just kind of went back and forth. And I was just, honestly, I don't fully know where I stand. I 100% know I stand against any kind of abuse. Mm-hmm. But in terms of letting these people, I'm going to pose this question this way to you, Taylor. Do you think...
I'm scared.
Do you think that Lamon and X members are trying to take something that's not theirs?
Again, that's like a very, very difficult question, because in a way it's like, oh, he is trying to help them, but they don't want his help. And being there is causing them to feel like, oh, he's imposing. You know, this is our sacred land.
What if he moves into somebody's house? And they're like, yo, I'm kicked out of my own house and you're moving in there?
And on top of it, bringing it back that it's not that he's, you know, moving into one person's home. So many people live there. And as we see Norma go back and visit a home, she was saying that over almost 200 people lived in this house before it got evicted. So many of her children were born there. So many people were born there. And it's a huge community. And now having someone... they really feel like someone's taking away their livelihood.
Yeah.
Did part of you kind of feel empathetic to that?
I totally felt empathetic. And this is where I mean, people who are libertarian, I'm not a libertarian, I'm probably more of a leftist, but I have a libertarian streak in that the government shouldn't go too far. We can enforce the law, can't have people performing underage marriages, but, and if you want to enforce that with the police or a guard or whatever, that's fine. But I don't think you have the right to take away people's homes. It just makes the problem worse. It creates more rancor. It leaves people out on the street. I felt that's more of a destructive thing than productive. I don't know. Maybe perhaps the government's goal is when we take their homes, we'll rehabilitate them, you know, into a normal society. But you can't just take something out without replacing it. They got to find a way, like, we'll give you your house back. You're saying house back, you know, if you adhere to the letter of the law.
You know, in a weird way, I feel like you could draw, like, a parallel to, like, European colonization where, you know, there's always, like, this belief that, oh, we're Western, we're advanced, or we're going to be spreading, like, all this great stuff, like Christianity and, you know, culture and just, like, all this sort of, like, cultural advancement to a society. Like, it's what Europe has done throughout the course of world history. So I kind of get, like, they're kind of like upset with someone coming in and trying to make them better, when Norma specifically states, like, oh, you know, people make fun of us for, like, feeling bad that we're like this or we're like that, but I'm happy. Like, I'm happy the way I am. So, like, who are we to kind of, like, invade that bubble and disrupt it when this is all they know? Like, it's not up to us to say, hey, you're living a lie.
Right. And it seems, can we say that the only thing that's holding them back is just this notion of these kids getting married at a really young age that's completely inappropriate and illegal? Mm-hmm. If that policy goes away,
to me, everything else is legit. Yeah. As long as they're not breaking the law.
What do you think, Taylor?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like that, especially in this episode. Like, I don't know. I mean, we only had, what, like 40-some minutes to go over all this stuff. So if there's circumstances beyond that, beyond the child marriages and obviously the sexual abuse, then, yeah, let's, this right. can't happen. But as it stands, it's like if they get rid of those things...
They get rid of Jeff as well. That's
here's,
the thing.
Here's the thing. Getting discrediting Jeffers and stripping him. See, the thing is, where we know he wasn't sincere, because he was hoarding all the money. Mm-hmm. All the money was tied up with him. So if the government is going to take the money, which I'm sure they probably did, that they've probably instituted a legal practice where they can take this illegal money from him because he's doing illegal things, the government should put that money back in. And that's what I'm curious about. If you're punishing Jeffers and you're punishing, you know, this money he has and you're confiscating it, put it back into them and say you have to obey the law. Right. But if the government's just keeping it, I mean, that's just a land grab, you know, if they're not giving it back.
That's the thing, is that a lot of their beliefs stem within, again, are so strong. And even if we try to come to a compromise, it seems that there's a lot of things they won't come and compromise with, that one of them being polygamy. Polygamy is illegal in the States, yet that's something they really deeply believe in. They believe it's, you know, in the Bible, you need to have at least three wives, and taking that away is taking away their identity, may I say. So it's very, very, very tricky. And we mentioned that they were able to, we had a first meeting at Christine's area. And then later on, which I was even more shocked, was that they actually had them, the two of them, sit down with the journalists and have a real conversation of both, where both of them stood. How did you think that each of these people, both Norma and Lamond, stood their ground?
I thought it was so civil. Like, yeah. It really surprised me. And, you know, even though we don't agree with all of Norma's beliefs, and I think we feel bad for her because she's clearly, you know, been sort of brainwashed to follow Warren Jeff, she's like, I'm not going to sit down and eat dinner with him, but I, you know, wish that everyone have a good life. I hope they enjoy themselves. And it was crazy. Like, it was so not... like, vicious.
I thought they were going to say, you're all going to burn in hell. Yeah. But that wasn't her perspective.
Yeah, I actually was really pleasantly surprised by that as well. I feel like Lamont articulated himself so eloquently. I was shocked. I was like, you know, where is all of this coming from? Like, the way that he made all of his statements and said, you know what, like, I'm not trying to, like, be malicious by saying this. I do feel like she's been slightly brainwashed in this way. And, like, just the way he said it, like, in a way where he was so considerate of her feelings.
He was diplomatic.
He did it in a way, it wasn't like, oh, no offense, but this. It was, like, in a way that was so, like, sweet, civil, and, like, you can tell he's really trying to, like, have, like, this back and forth dialogue. Like, he's really trying to not just make his point and make himself heard, he's really trying to listen and understand her point of view as well. And yeah. I think that's so important in having a conversation with people who have a completely different mindset from you.
Yeah, it's true. Is that again, these conversations are so important, as you're saying, is that having these dialogues is the only way we're going to move forward. And even having these conversations that we're having here at AfterBuzz are really important because they're putting the word out of how people can just, within a community, you can have your... form your opinions, have your beliefs, so just be aware how you do that. Even though you might be born into something, maybe question it, maybe don't, figure out where to move forward. And these are the tools that are so, so important. One thing I do, if I am going to criticize one thing of the episode, is that I feel that I would have liked to have an example of someone who heard the news of Jeff being sexually abusing people and Kim going to jail, becoming a non-believer, because it seemed like Lamont left and knew he was a non-believer for a while within the community, was questioning things, and then decided to leave. And then you have this scandal that happens, and then Jeff's arrested, and the believers are even more believers. And I wonder, is there a case of someone who just is like, oh wow, was this a lie? And that was a big hole for me. Do you guys agree?
Yeah, I kept thinking, I was like, are people, like, I want to know, are people ostracizing her from the community for speaking out against him and telling them that he raped her? Like, does she have any support within the community? Are they trying to justify the rape and say, oh no, honey, he was just trying to build some sort of, like, common union between the two of you and, like, this beautiful... Like, I want to know what was said. How was it justified? If it wasn't justified, how are they still a part of the church?
I feel like it's just like what Taylor said, in the sense that, you know, he would never molest his own daughters. They're lying to bring him down. I think everybody in the community was like, he would never do that. Does he marry people who are underage? Yes, but he would never do that. Why are you making that up? You hate your father. You're rebellious.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Very true.
And I also wish they would have, like, played the audio tapes that he, like, had said, or, like, showed them journal entries. Like, maybe you're right. Maybe that's exactly what would have happened. They would have just dismissed it and be like, oh, this is fabricated. This isn't real. But it's like showing them and confronting them with the actual evidence, I think would have been interesting to see how they get around that.
Right. And how there's that click, because again, in past episodes, we discussed people just having that click of, wait, I can no longer be part of this. And if this, you know, coming out is a factor or not. So as you're saying, I mean, it's really hard. How can you justify these actions within your faith? Mm-hmm. However, we see these kinds of unfortunate scandals and crimes happening in a lot of religions.
Can I say
and
this?
It's not, oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
Oh, thank you. I was just saying, and it's not even just religion, like this concept of, you know, someone blaming the victim of rape for what happened is just like this, like the way our society works and the system, like the rape culture that we have right now. So it's not even a religious thing. It's kind of like, you know, how a lot of people think about these things.
And denial transcends religion. All of us have some hidden corner of things that we don't want to face or admit.
Fear.
Fear, dealing with it. We have people in our lives that we don't want to call out on their mess. We tolerate certain things, and it doesn't have to be in as extreme as pedophilia, but human beings experience a lot of denial, and dare I say, I don't know, possibly even to function in this society, maybe there's certain things you have to block off. It's inevitable. We'd all like to like get beyond that and evolve, but denial is going to be something that's around as long as human beings exist.
Yeah, that's very true. But yeah, this episode was just so layered and opened up so many conversations and such a great dialogue. Is there anything you guys want to bring up before we end our review of episode 7 of Cults of an Extreme?
Can I throw out a question to all you ladies?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We're all on the same page as far as the pedophilia. Like, that's got to stop. But because they believe in polygamy, and I think, is polygamy legal in Utah? Let's say California, where we're out here. Let's say if willing adults, willing women over 18 agree to share a man with sister wives, do you guys think that should be illegal? There's no abuse going on, but if two willing people, three willing people who are adults agree to, you know, to get married, say in California, do you think that should be legal? Is that what do you guys think about that?
Yeah, I mean, morally, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. Obviously, for me, I would never want, like, to be married to someone where I'm, like, sharing my husband with two other people. But when you think about the morality of it, I don't necessarily think there's anything wrong with a wife having multiple husbands or a husband having multiple...
Oh, okay, yes, here she go both ways.
Or a husband having multiple wives. It is very unconventional, but... as long as they're all consenting, I don't see why not. It's just so bizarre for me to like process.
It exists, ladies.
Yeah, and like polyamory, I believe, is a real thing that, you know, some people are just polyamorous and, you know, want to be in multiple relationships at a time. I saw this really interesting movie about the guy who wrote the Wonder Woman comics. And he was actually in a polyamorous relationship with two women, and they were all kind of in a relationship together.
But were they married, though? Not...
Well, they couldn't. It was like the 1940s. Yeah. I don't know.
Are you talking about Stan Lee, who created the...
No. Okay. It's the movie's called Professor Marston and the Wonder Woman, and it's very, very interesting. And it's like, wow, I could actually feel the love between all of them. So, I don't know. It's like really tricky.
Yeah, it is really tricky. I think when it comes to people's personal romantic lives, I don't think we should have a say in them if no abuse is happening. Yeah, however,
I
feel like this kind of system, especially because it's highly geared towards men having multiple partners and not necessarily women, which is something that we do see, it becomes tricky to figure out if there's any abuse there, because it could be mental, it could be obviously maybe physical, but it's just hard to govern. If there's a way for everyone to be really happy, yeah, go for it. Have as many partners as you want. In terms of a government, we need to put certain laws and certain things into place, because when it comes to taxes, when it comes to just owning property and all of these legalities, if your couple is supposed to be for two people. That's how the government is set up. So if it's more than that, how is that going to be affected? And we want to make sure people aren't taking advantage of anything and having families and then... or wanting to do a business and having it more of a financial gain of some sort. I just don't think our government has yet to figure out all these logistics. But if everyone's happy, just do it. Floats your
boat. I agree that women should be able to have multiple wives as men. But here's the interesting thing. I'm sorry, and I'll shut up after this. But it brings to mind a certain conversation about, okay, let's say if I'm an 18-year-old woman, say I'm 21 years old, living in the state of California, because a lot of people sign up for dysfunctional relationships. Let's say, I want to sleep with a man for money if I'm 21. Or let's say if I'm 21, I choose to be with the pimp. And he doesn't beat me, doesn't take care of me, but we have this equal relationship. Not saying it's healthy, But if you're over 18 and a woman makes a dysfunctional choice because she comes from a perhaps dysfunctional, abusive background, if it's against the law, fine. But is that morally wrong for her to be able to make a choice that she signed up for?
I don't know. It's just like there's so many layers and tricky things to like that question.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's just so many layers and so many different directions we could take that. But we are running out of time, and I'm gonna make sure we get to everything we want to talk about. But please keep the conversation going with us because there's so much to talk about. They weren't able to cover everything in this episode. We're sure we could keep this conversation going for so much more longer, mm-hmm. and we want to keep it going throughout the weeks to come. Especially if you're listening on demand, make sure to leave us comments both on YouTube and iTunes. And actually, Al, can you tell us a little bit more about what's going on in terms of iTunes and YouTube? And how our lovely audience can help us.
Okay, cool. Very, very, very good. No problem. I will start off with the live read, and then I'll move on to the YouTube comments. All right. Hey, AfterBuzzers. Our networks produces after shows for nearly all your favorite TV shows. From dramas, reality TV, sci-fi, and more, there's no network that works harder to serve television fans. But we need your help. We're asking that you please subscribe to one or more of our YouTube channels. By subscribing to our channel, YouTube will suggest content that's tailor-made for you, and you'll help our AfterBuzz audience even grow. And if you're worried about pesky notifications, don't be, because the notifications are optional. So hit that subscribe button now for this channel, and check out our other AfterBuzz YouTube channels as well. Let us know you did so in the comments, and we'll thank you on the air. We'll give you shout-outs like we got coming up. For now, thanks for being the best fans and for helping us to be the ESPN of TV talk.
Thank you, guys. We really appreciate it. And yeah, we cover a lot of shows, and we'll tell you a little bit more about that when we do our outros. But shout out to the fans. We have some awesome fans. Yeah, tell us about it.
Listen to the comment from last week. It's going to blow your mind. For those of you... Oh, I just lost. I can't believe I just lost.
I was just going to say, while you're looking for that, Al has the best radio voice ever. Like, while he's like delivering that.
92.3.5.
Like, I could actually listen to this forever. Yeah.
Oh, here we go. Do you guys remember Samantha Brousseau from last week? She was the former member of the cult who actually spoke on. She was the focal point who came back, you know, and confronted the church. She left a YouTube comment.
Oh, my God. I'm going to read it. Samantha.
Yeah, and we should probably – I'll forward this comment to the proper person in the staff, and maybe we can have you on the show, because this is what she said. Thank you so much for your comments on my story. You made me feel that everything I went through was worth it. I'd love to share more of my story with you and answer your questions about what it took to share my story. You both have an incredibly ability to read between the lines. Oh, okay, that was us. That takes talent. I also love the observations you made about the conflicting responses between EW and his wife, JS. Furthermore, addressing the gravity of speaking out and the repercussions being losing the rare and little family connection I have had, something we saw in this one too, in the hope of helping others achieve freedom, no matter the sacrifice. And she leaves a hashtag, liberation point, and then hashtag, where your freedom begins. And I suppose if you go to these hashtags, then you might be able to find some more information.
Oh my gosh. Well, thank you so much, Samantha. Yeah. For you guys who haven't seen last week's episode, it was just so heavy and yet so beautiful because she just had so much bravery. And so I really appreciate that you were able to leave us a comment. It means a lot. And we would love to have you on the show. But before we wrap things up, we only have a minute left. Taylor, can you give us some really, really quick news, updates, and what's going on?
Absolutely. So for a special segment,
okay,
TV news. All right, our special segment really, really fast. There's no celebrities that were actually in this cult, but for the regular Church of Latter-day Saints, not the fundamental one that this is, Katherine Heigl, Mitt Romney, and David Archuleta were all in that at one point, or are still in that. So that's pretty interesting.
Wow.
Yeah. And so for news, we have actually a really recent piece of news that just happened on June 27th. So two Canadian men named Winston Blackmore and... someone whose last name is O'Lair were found guilty of polygamy because they were in this cult. They had actually served as bishops in the FLDS in the isolated community of Bountiful in southeastern British Columbia. Blackmore had 24 wives, and Oler had 5, and between them they had more than 160 children.
Oh my God.
So that's crazy. Blackmore was ordered to serve 6 months in a conditional house arrest sentence and year-long probation, and was also sentenced to 150 hours of community service. And Oler was ordered to serve a 3-month conditional sentence under house arrest, followed by year-long probation and 75 hours of community service, which is actually a pretty lenient sentence considering they had each faced up to 5 years in prison.
Wow.
That was an interesting piece of news in Canada.
Very interesting. Okay, well, I think that does about it for this episode, episode 7. Great discussion, even better panelists. Taylor, tell me, what shows are you doing outside of here, and where can the people find you?
Sure, you guys can find me on Twitter at @Alphabet_Anne, on Instagram at @Taylor_Gates_. I also host The 100 After Show every Tuesday at 10, Younger every Wednesday at 9, and Law & Order SVU every Thursday at 8.
Wow, look at you. Mina.
Hey guys, you can follow my adventures on Instagram at @MinaMakesMagic, and you can also catch me every Monday night covering the after show for The Proposal, which comes right after The Bachelorette. Super fun show. You can also catch me every Thursday at AfterBuzz covering Girlfriend's Guide to Divorce. So definitely check that out. Much lighter.
Wow. Hey everybody, it's Al G. My Twitter you'll see below is Jamaica House Doc. That's the film I worked on. And right now we're running a GoFundMe campaign. So please, if it's possible, go to the GoFundMe app, go to the website, and if you put in the search engine, Jamaica House European Tour, just check it out. We need the support. We need donations or anything. Just check it out and leave a comment. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you for that. You can keep the conversation going with me on Instagram at @BonjourJuliet.
Bonjour.
We will see you guys next week for another episode. Bye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
Herein are those of the hosts only, do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.